This week's parasha is Parashas Vayigash, and it's also 2 days after Hay Teves. And the sikha that the Rebbe spoke in the year of Vayigash Tav Shinu Beis is quite a lengthy one, and I would strongly encourage everybody to learn it inside. But I'm not going to really follow exactly the progression of the sikha, rather discuss some of the points that are negeya very much lamaisa. B'chlal, if you look at the sikhas and the Maimarim of Vayigash, especially the sikhas that everyone said the years after Hay Teves, there's a recurring theme which the Rebbe emphasized very strongly in the year Tav Shinu Beis. And basically, what the message seems to be is that, as the expression goes, we have met the enemy, and it was us. In other words, that what happened on Hay Teves was a reverse of the natural events as we always traditionally understood the order of events and goals. Traditionally, the order of events and goals has been that we have been oppressed by the Goyim. We have been persecuted, oppressed by the Goyim. Even in situations where there have been situations in the past where Jews, starting with the Nes of Hanukkah, with the exile under the Greeks, where Jews actually collaborated with the enemy. At the time of the Alter Rebbe, it was a Jew that actually offered false accusations against the Alter Rebbe. But ultimately, the actual persecution was at the hands of the Goyim. And from these, we were saved. As the old joke goes, you know, when you want to know what any Jewish holiday is about, the old joke says, Gentiles persecuted us, we won, let's eat. So, basically, here we have a situation where things were very different, where the opposition was actually in the hands of a Jew, not only in the hands of a Jew, but it was by the way of somebody that was actually not only a Jew, and not only from within Lubavitch itself, but from actually within the Rebbe's own family. And yet, the means by which the salvation came was through a Goy. In other words, the opposition came about through a Jew, and the salvation came about through a Goy. That is the way, that is the system, that is the event which took place on Hay Teves. That the persecution was at the hands of a Jew, the opposition was at the hands of a Jew, and the salvation was through the messenger, the unlikely Shliach. The salvation was actually a Goy. So what is the significance of that? What is the significance of that dramatic change from the traditional turn of events, whenever we were faced with different forms of oppression, whether physical, material, or spiritual? What is the significance of this dramatic change? So the Rebbe explains that the significance is, in the most simple terms, the Rebbe says basically what this signifies is the fact that the non-Jewish world is ready for Gevurah. The Rebbe says that the non-Jews are ready for redemption. The only thing that they are, what they're doing is, according to the Rebbe, the non-Jews are ready for redemption, and the non-Jew is waiting, is turning around and looking and waiting for a Jew to be ready for redemption. That's how the Rebbe defines the significance of that event and obviously many subsequent events. For instance, we find this simile with the miracles of the Gulf War, where the opposition was actually at the hands of other non-Jews, and yet other non-Jews stepped in order to protect Eretz Yisrael. The Jews in Eretz Yisrael did nothing to defend themselves. They did absolutely nothing. They were totally passive. And again, non-Jews stepped in order to protect the Jewish people from the attack of other non-Jews. So we find ourselves in a world, on the one hand, in exile, certainly in spiritual exile, in terms of our own spiritual divine service. We certainly are feeling the limitations of being in exile, the internal exile. And yet the Rebbe says the external exile, for all practical purposes, no longer exists. The external trappings of exile, which is the persecution at the hands of the Gentiles, the Rebbe says for all practical purposes, this does not have to exist. It's up to the Jew to stand up and clarify, make it clear to the Gentile what his role is. And his role is to help a Jew, to serve a Jew, to make it possible for provide the resources for the Jewish people to fulfill their divine service. And when a Jew does so, firmly, clearly, unequivocally, without bowing, scraping, kneeling, without doing anything to show subservience to the guy, when a Jew makes it very clear what he needs and what he expects the Gentile to provide, whatever it says, they will, in fact, cooperate. So the external trappings of exile, persecution at the hands of the Gentiles, that emphasis for all practical purposes, does not exist, or at the very least does not have to exist. The problem is ourselves. The problem is us. The problem is not with them. The problem is us in terms of the degree to which we are or are not capitalizing on that situation. In other words, we're not going out and clarifying for the Gentile world what their role is in order that they should be able to fulfill their role. And part of the reason why we're not doing that is because we are struggling ourselves with what our role is. We have not yet made the transition internally to realizing our role as the leaders of the world. There's a saying that goes that it took one day to take the Jews out of Egypt, but it took 40 years to take Egypt out of the Jews. The fact is, it took a lot more than 40 years. Because the problem is, after thousands of years of exile, the Rebbe said, okay, the time of your redemption has arrived. Very nice. The problem is that the process of taking the exile out of the Jews, the process of taking the Jews out of the exile, that ever says, has more or less been completed. The process of taking the exile out of the Jews, that is something that the Rebbe left for us to do. That is something that we have to work on. And this is something that we see in every area of life, in every issue of the day that faces us at this time. We can see in every single area that the issue always comes back to not any external opposition, not any external persecution, but rather a lack of understanding and fulfillment of our role as Jews within the redemption. Everybody says, the first question that I have whenever we talk about Geula, we talk about redemption, first question that comes up is, what about the situation in Eretz Yisrael? What about the situation in Israel? How can you say that we're living in times of redemption? Look what's going on. Jews are being killed. It's terrible. And it is actually terrible. It's not just the people asking the question that think it's terrible. It actually is terrible. But the Rebbe said many, many years ago, the Rebbe said, you know what's missing? You know what we really need to do? is what we really need to do is proclaim to the whole world that the Jewish land, that the land of Israel is God's gift to the Jewish people, and it's an eternal inheritance, and therefore it's not ours to give away. It's non-negotiable, because God said so in the Torah, in the Bible, in the scriptures, whatever word you want to use for it. God said it's ours, and therefore there's nothing to discuss. Levi said that if we would do that, all the guys would stop bothering us, and nobody would question our claim to the land. There's, it might not happen immediately. At first they may make some noise about it, but ultimately the guy will fall into line. Now, the truth is, when the Rebbe said it, at the time that the Rebbe said it, if you ask the average person in the street, and not just an Israeli politician, but if you ask the average person in the street, do you think that'll work? There are 100 million Arabs, armed to the teeth, wanting to destroy the land of Israel. They have the tacit or sometimes even explicit approval of all the other nations of the world. And do you think that what's going to stop them is that you're going to get up and say, by the way, you should know there's a Rashi in Chumash that says that God gives the land to whoever he wants to, and he took it from the Gentiles and he gave it to us. Do you think making that statement is going to make all these hundreds of millions of people, and ultimately all these billions of people, say, oops, sorry, we didn't realize, oh, we apologize, forgive us, oh, really, oh, Rashi, sorry. It doesn't sound particularly realistic. You figure, like, come on, you have to be. The Rebbe is an extremely intelligent person. Everybody grants the Rebbe that, even his greatest detractors. And everyone, including the top Israeli politicians, agreed that the Rebbe had a very good grasp and understanding of the political scene. And yet, the Rebbe's solution seems to be a little bit simplistic. It doesn't seem to be very, very practical. It doesn't seem to really relate to the real world as we know it. And yet, the fact that Rebbe says is that's what we need to do. Just recently, an Arab-American journalist who identifies himself as a Christian, whose articles have been flying all around the internet because he writes pro-Israel, and he is an Arab. So this fellow writes, says, you know what the problem with the Israeli government is? He was just hanging on the wall in 770 this past week. He's an Arab. He says, you know what the problem with the Israeli government is? He says, the problem with these people is that they forgot about God. You see, if they would just get up and say, and tell the world that our land is non-negotiable because it's an eternal gift from God as outlined in the scriptures, everybody would ultimately have to give in. Because all current religions are based on the scriptures. And therefore, ultimately, everyone would have to admit that there's no real claim against the Jewish people for the Holy Land. Because the problem with these people is that they forgot about God. And they think that they got the country from the United Nations. If you think you got the country from the United Nations, no, the United Nations gave it to you, the United Nations can take it away. But if they would just realize and proclaim that they didn't get the country from the United Nations, they got it from God, then there's no room for negotiation, there's no room for argument, there's no room for any dispute. So this is an Arab that today that's writing the same thing that they never said for the last 30 years. But you know what's missing? What's missing is the Jews ought to get up. This is a guy. So a guy is now telling us, an Arab guy is now telling us the same thing that they haven't told us for 30 years. In other words, what is that? I don't need to bring a proof that the Rebbe is right from an Arab guy. That's not the point. The point is that even the Goyim recognized this. The Rebbe said that if we would stand up and take that position, the Goyim would have to concede. They would have to give in. The Rebbe, what a Goy is telling us is, yeah, that's right. If you would just tell us that this land belongs to you because God gave it to you, then we would have no collect. And he finishes off the article. He says, what do I care? I'm an Arab American. I'm a Christian. What does it matter to me whether the Jewish people have the land? So he says, because my religious, the spiritual life is based on scriptures, therefore it's important to me to see that what it says in the scriptures be fulfilled. That's why I care. That's what Akai is saying. The reason that he cares is because in his scriptures it says that the land belongs to the Jewish people. So what the Goyim are telling us is the same message that the Rebbe is saying all along. The Goyim are ready. The problem is not the Goyim. The problem is within ourselves. And when I get to this area, the biggest problem is not just amongst the Jewish people in general. Now we have a serious problem within Lubavitch itself. There are people within Lubavitch itself in positions of power that are saying that everything that the Rebbe said about Shlemus Aretz doesn't apply to them. That's it. They've made public statements. One of the things that Rebbe always spoke about was the halach in the laws of Shabbos, some of Shin Chavtas, in which it says that if Goyim are threatening, even if they're only demanding some hay or some straw, and they say, if you just give us some hay or some straw, we'll leave you alone, we won't fight you. If the city that they're approaching is a city that's on the border, then you go out to war, even on Shabbos, take up weapons, you go out to war, even on Shabbos, to protect the city. So that's one of the things that the Rebbe emphasized time and again. So you see that making concessions, even if they're only minor concessions, increases the danger, because the proof is that even to concede some hay and some straw, the halacha says you're not allowed to do that. You have to rather be mechallel Shabbos and go fight rather than make even the smallest concession. So you see that from halacha, that making concessions increases the danger. So I recently heard the head of the biggest organization in Eretz Yisrael, Lubavitch organization in Eretz Yisrael, he says that it's no longer relevant to publicize that. Why is it no longer relevant to publicize that? Because everybody sees that the concessions increase the danger. You have to tell them that the halacha says that everyone sees the concessions increase the danger and they want it anyway. So what are you going to do? When people didn't realize that concessions increase the danger, so you needed to publicize the fact that it says in halacha that making concessions increases danger. But now that everybody could see clearly that making concessions increases the danger, so that's it, they want to do it anyway. So what are you quoting them the halacha for? It's irrelevant. In other words, what does that mean? That means that since obviously he has some political issues at stake, and certain organizations, their funding could be adversely affected if Lubavitch comes out very strongly. If Lubavitch comes out very strongly against the peace process, so they're looking for excuses not to come out strongly against the peace process. So how do they find excuses? You don't need to tell everybody it's a danger because everyone knows already. Oh, so now Lubavitch doesn't have to go out until when nobody knew. Then Lubavitch had to go out and tell people there's a danger. Now that everybody knows there's a danger, so Lubavitch can keep quiet. In other words, the problem is that we are our own worst enemies. We don't have to worry about enemies on the outside. That's not our problem. Our problem is we have to worry about enemies on the inside. And that doesn't just mean on the inside of Lubavitch, as we saw in Hey Davis. But we actually have to worry about the enemy inside ourselves. We have the same problem, in more subtle forms. We all have the same problem. There are things that we do or do not say. There are things that we do or do not do based on our own internal exile. Because we think if you say, you can't say this, you can't do this. In other words, you have to be realistic. There's a big world out there. You have to adjust yourself. We feel that we have to make certain adjustments in our divine service in order to accommodate the world. And the Rebbe is telling us that the lesson of Hei Tevis and the lesson of Vayigash, the story of Yehuda and Yosef, and the story of Mordechai and Haman, is the lesson is the exact opposite. We have to look into what Torah says. And if Torah says such and such, then we don't have to change or compromise to accommodate the world. We have to go out and tell the world to change in order to accommodate us. And when we do that, the world will in fact change in order to accommodate us. There are so many things that the Rebbe spoke about that nobody ever bothered to do. And if you look into it, if we analyze why did nobody ever bother to do it, the answer will be pretty obvious. Because they were afraid, what will the world say? How will the world react? That is the fear that has held us back, not only from publicity as it relates to Mashiach and other matters. There are many things that the Rebbe has said that nobody has done simply because we are afraid, how will the world react, what will the world say? For example, one of the things that the Rebbe devoted quite a bit of time to in his sikhas, especially the ones that were set on weekdays and with live hookups and cable TV, where the Rebbe assumed that he had a certain level of viewership that were non-Jewish, which I actually have encountered non-Jews on Mitzrayim who told me that they used to watch the Rebbe on cable TV. They used to watch the Rebbe's Fabregas. And more than once I met a girl who told me that they used to listen to the Rebbe's Sichus when the Rebbe would Fabregas on cable TV. So one of the things that the Rebbe spoke about was the importance of introducing silent prayer in the schools. And the Rebbe spoke about this on a number of occasions, most notably Yud Beis Tammuz Tavshin Dalet Mem. And one of the things that the Rebbe said, in one of the sentences that the Rebbe said, how can we do this? People ask, you can go, there's 100 senators, there's 300 and something congressmen, so many, how are you going to go out and convince everybody that you have to introduce silent prayers into the school? The Rebbe says like this. The Rebbe said that there's a very simple way of doing it, a very simple practical way. The Rebbe said that you get a lawyer to write up a document in legal language, but at the same time it should be in language simple enough for children to understand, which is a kunst. To be able to write something in legalese that a child can understand, because most things in legalese even adults can't understand. But the fact is that Rebbe said that you get a lawyer to write up a legal document that even children can understand and start a nationwide signature campaign of children. The children should sign this petition asking for silent prayer in public schools. The Rebbe said exactly how to do it. Make up this document, a petition, which should go to all members of Congress, all the politicians that make the decisions, copies of this petition, and it should be a nationwide effort to sign up children. Not that adults should ask for it, but that children should sign a petition asking for a moment of silent prayer in the public school. Did anybody ever do it? Whoever said specifically how to do it. The Rebbe was talking about a nationwide petition and that it shouldn't be just a bunch of people in front of it, but it should be across the nation, and Jewish children should be signing this petition. Not a couple of religious Jews in Khan Heights who don't send their kids to public school anymore. It was not done in a very big way. It was not done in a very big way. It didn't get any national attention. It didn't get any exposure. It happened. I'm not telling you nobody did anything in it. It was done. It wasn't done in any kind of way that made a significant impact. And one of the reasons why, and the reason why it wasn't done in that kind of way that made a real significant impact, is because, you know, there's a big world out there. There's a big world out there. There's a lot of people. And who is little old me? I'm one little person. We're a few small people. Who are we to take on the whole world? We can take on the whole world, the whole United States, and make a tunnel, make a... You can. So you do what little you can locally, and if it doesn't work, so it fizzes out. But there's no... In other words, when we look at the size of the Rebbe's vision, what the Rebbe is telling us is, there's no reason why our vision has to be any small. The Rebbe says, in the Sikha Vayigash Nubez, the Rebbe says, that every Jew not only has the power to have the Goyim subservient to him, that the Goyim should serve him and every individual there, but even the leaders of the nation should be subservient to him, like we see from Yehuda and Yosef, right? Yehuda approached Yosef, who was the most powerful ruler in the entire world at that time, directly under power. But Mitzrayim was the nation that ruled all the other countries of the world. And everybody was totally dependent on them for food as well. Yosef was completely in charge of the food distribution. He was the most powerful man in the world. And Yehuda approaches the most powerful man in the world and he says, listen, do me a favor. Do me a favor. You want a slave, take me, let my brother go. That's one option. The other option is I'll kill you. You know, there's another option. I'll kill you. There's a whole country here. We'll kill the whole country. No problem. I'll kill you. I'll kill Pare. We'll wipe out the country. No problem. Those are your options. In other words, what Yehuda is saying is, where is Yehuda is not saying, the first thing Yehuda said is, take me as a slave and let my brother go. He didn't say, I'm going to kill you. He said, if you're not going to do what has to be done, then I'll have no choice. But where will that power come from? Where will I have the power to... In other words, he's expressing his total connection to Hashem, his total belief that there's no power in the world that can rule, that can affect Yaakov and his children. So the Rebbe says, what's the lesson from this? The lesson from this is that every individual Jew, whatever it is, you have to be a big leader, you have to be a great charismatic speaker, whatever it is, every single individual Jew has the power to not only have the Goyim be subservient to them and help them in their divine service, but even the leaders and the most powerful leaders of the nation. The Rebbe says, what do you need? What do you need? How do you do this? What do you have to do in order to get the most powerful leaders in the world to be subservient to your will? What do you have to do? The Rebbe says, all you have to do is want it. If you want it, you have the power. Obviously, you got to use the power. Having a power and pulling the covers over your head doesn't do anything for you, right? Obviously, if you know you have the power, you feel you have the power, you believe that you have the power, right? If Yehuda would have stayed home, would have gone home and gone to sleep, nothing would have happened, right? You know you have the power. Now you have to approach Yosef and say, listen, this is the way it works. This is how it works. This is what we need. Here's the shopping list. This is what we need. This is how it has to work. So the Rebbe says that every individual has this power. The truth is that we actually have real life examples of this power, but we don't learn the proper lessons. When we hear stories, you know, everybody loves stories. But the point of the story is that you have to learn the lesson from the story. But there are stories that we've heard, and we went ooh and ah and wow, but we never learned the right lesson from the story. You see, a number of years ago, the Rebbe sent four shluchim to Russia to try to redeem the Sfarim from Russia, the Friedrich Rebbe's library, which is in the Leningrad library, which was appropriated by the communists. So the Rebbe sends these four shluchim. And one of the four shluchim contacted the Lubavitch Connection in Washington, D.C. and asked them to please approach various influential politicians in Washington to get involved. This Lubavitch Connection in Washington, D.C. said, nah, they're never going to get involved. What are you kidding? About some books? What do you think, these people have nothing better to do? Don't worry about your book, worry about books. Forget about it. I can't use my contact in order to try to get any backing from the politicians when it comes to books. I need to use my connections for more important. So the guy says, what? Whoever wants his library? This shliach from America who has been sent to Russia says, what? Whoever wants his library? And you say that you can't get the politicians involved. So what does he do? He sends two of his kids to Washington, D.C. At that time, one was in his late teens, one in his early 20s. Sends two kids to Washington, D.C. and says, get the politicians involved. Okay, get the politicians involved. They come with a petition, and they have to start signing up senators and congressmen. How do you sign up senators and congressmen? There's two kids walking to Washington, D.C. You don't know anybody. So they find out that there's an underground train from the Capitol, which is used exclusively by congressmen and senators. So they think, oh, here's a place where if you get on that train, you have all these people sitting there, and you could approach them, and you have to start chasing each one in his office. It'll take forever. You got to get on the train. The only problem is that you're not allowed to get on the train if you're not a congressman or a senator. You have to show ID in order to get on the train. So they go down and they convince the person, they convince the guy in charge, I guess, whoever opens the doors, whoever you have to show your identification to. They convince the guy to let them on the train. So these two kids are running up and down the train, full of senators and congressmen. All day, signing up senators and congressmen that Russia should return the Sfarim to the Rebbe. And pretty much everybody saw it. Meanwhile, word gets back to, I don't know exactly how they made the connection, but ultimately they made a connection with the vice president. Mr. Al Gore is the vice president. And they made a connection with him, and they arranged a meeting. So they figured for the meeting, their father himself should come to the meeting, not two kids. So the father flew in from Russia, and he came to the meeting. He came to the meeting, and he got a letter from Al Gore. And Al Gore said to him the following. He said, I'm about to have my first meeting. The new administration is about to have its first official meeting with Russia. He says, I'm going to go and make my first meeting conditional on the fact that they agreed to release the Sfarim. And I'm going to bring back at least one. I will insist that they at least present me with one of the books in the collection as a sign of goodwill, as a show that they're going to do everything in their power. The government's going to do everything in its power to release the books. That's exactly what he did. He made his first meeting with the second most powerful country in the world. So the second most powerful man and the greatest superpower in the world makes his meeting with the most powerful people in the second most powerful superpower in the world conditional on the fact that they agreed to work on getting the Devil's Farm and that they actually present him with a safe, which in fact they did. He came back with a sefer, and he sent it to the Rebbe with a letter, and that's what happened. Now, this got all the way to the President of the United States, and the President of the United States decided that a year or so later he was going to go to Russia. He decided that if his Vice President came back with one book, he doesn't want to do less than the Vice President. He's going to insist that they give him seven books not just going to come back with one book. He's going to outdo the vice president. He's going to come back with 7 books from the Rebbe's collection for the Rebbe. And that's exactly what he did. A year later, the president of the United States, the most powerful man in the free world, and the most powerful man in all the world, goes to the Russia and says, I need 7 books to bring back for the Lubavitch of them. What time? I mean, whatever. It was officially after his stroke. It wasn't like he was in any kind of contact with the Rebbe, had any kind of interaction with the Rebbe. It's just that a couple of kids started running around Washington, D.C., making a tumult that they need the Rebbe's farm back. And not only that, world leaders around the world, prime ministers of Italy, France, England, other countries, all signed. And in fact, the Russian government agreed that it has to be returned. Whatever it is, min hashamayim, why it's still being held up in the Russian courts. The Russian lower court ruled that it has to be returned. Whatever it is, there's one Russian that's actually zechayim that it's not coming back. And he's fighting it all the way through all the Russian courts. Okay, whatever it is, why min hashamayim, it's not actually fully taking place.